A new beginning. A conclusion has finally been reached between Iran and the P5+1 group of countries. What Iran has said all along, that Iran's nuclear program is used for civilian purposes. As such, a joint comprehensive plan of action has been drawn up. Meanwhile, U.S. Congress has displayed complete disapproval of the deal without even knowing the complete text of the JCPOA, Iran's historical nuclear conclusion, subject of this edition of the debate.
Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif and EU Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini have announced the historic conclusion of intensive nuclear talks between Tehran and the P5+1. They've read the statement on the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as the JCPOA, reached in Vienna on July 14th. Amongst other things, the text of the JCPOA states, world powers recognize Iran's peaceful nuclear program and respect the country's nuclear rights. The United Nations will recognize Iran as a nuclear power. Iran will continue uranium enrichment as well as research and development on advanced centrifuges. Arak heavy water reactor will continue activities and will be modernized. An arms embargo against Iran will be lifted and replaced with some restrictions. All anti-Iran sanctions will be lifted.
Iran reaffirms that under no circumstances will Iran ever seek, develop, or acquire any nuclear weapons. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action includes Iran's own long-term plan with agreed limitations on Iran's nuclear program and will produce the comprehensive lifting of all UN Security Council sanctions as well as multilateral and national sanctions related to Iran's nuclear program, including steps on access in areas of trade, technology, finance, and energy.
The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action is a balanced deal that respects the interests of all sides. It is also complex, detailed, and technical. The full main text and all its annexes will be presented within the next few days to the Security Council for endorsement.
President Hassan Rouhani said the nuclear negotiations prove that Iran is not seeking weapons of mass destruction. He hailed the conclusion of the nuclear talks as a win-win outcome, which was secured by the Iranian people's patience.
After 23 months of negotiations by the Islamic Republic of Iran with the six world powers, today we've managed to reach a new point. What mattered the most during this period was the steadfastness, patience, and resistance shown by the courageous people of Iran.
U.S. President Barack Obama also hailed the achievement as a comprehensive and long-term deal with Iran, saying he will veto any congressional legislation that would threaten it.
I am confident that this deal will meet the national security interests of the United States and our allies. So I will veto any legislation that prevents the successful implementation of this deal.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry commented on a possible congressional rejection of the conclusion.
If Congress were to veto the deal, Congress, the United States of America, would be in non-compliance with this agreement and contrary to all of the other countries in the world. I don't think that's going to happen.
The conclusion reached in Vienna followed more than 2 weeks of marathon talks. The discussions were the latest in a process that lasted for over a decade to resolve the standoff over Iran's nuclear program.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, author and historian Webster Griffin Tarpley, joins us from Washington. And we have political commentator Richard Millard, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. Let me find out from you, Webster Griffin Tarpley, what is the significance of the conclusion of these nuclear talks that comes after 12 years of negotiations?
Well, I think we have to start by saying this is one of the most positive developments in the international arena in many, many years, and that it at least gives us some possibility that the international system is not completely dysfunctional, but that it actually can solve certain problems. Today we had Signora Mogherini, who is the director of the European Union foreign policy, saying that this is a sign of hope. I think that's something that a lot of people can share. President Putin of Russia noted that that this is a sigh of relief for much of the world. So we are no longer locked, seemingly, onto this path towards some obscure confrontation leading to a regional war. That, I think, that has been lifted. And also the other thing, the inherent irrationality, the absurd and obsolete stupidity of these economic sanctions, which has caused a lot of damage to a lot of people. I think that is also going to come to an end soon. Notice that it was last week in St. Petersburg that President Putin of Russia said the sanctions against Iran have to end. And from that, I would say these sanctions are gone forever now. They will not be snapped back, as the phrase goes. And one of the reasons, of course, is that the United States and the NATO powers are waging sanctions against Russia. So I don't see any way that Russia would ever consent to being pushed back into this anti-Iran sanctions regime when they themselves are on the receiving end of what is, after all, economic warfare. Maybe one last thing, though. None of this was necessary. This entire lost decade was purely needless, in the sense that it started from the neocons, it started from a double standard, it started from hypocrisy, that Israel was immune to this kind of scrutiny, India, Pakistan, other nuclear powers, no scrutiny of this type, and of course Saudi Arabia. There are always these rumors that they've gotten Pakistani nuclear weapons or soon will get them. So Iran has been treated very unfairly, and only now do we see a modicum of fairness and equity in the treatment of Iran. But on the whole, a good result.
Richard Miller, why do you think that Israel is so vehemently against this deal when U.S. President Barack Obama came out and said that this deal is going to ensure security, is based on verification, but yet Israel continues with its rants, as we witnessed with the Prime Minister Netanyahu in his speech?
Well, I think Netanyahu speaks for many people in the region, in the Middle East. I'm not just talking about the governments, but this is almost a declaration of war, what's happened today, a declaration of war on the people of Lebanon, on the people of innocent people of Syria, innocent people in Israel, even the Palestinians, and even the innocent people in Iran. This strengthens a dictatorial regime, the Iranian regime. It strengthens Hezbollah, that is killing thousands, tens of thousands, and still and has killed tens of thousands of innocent civilians in Syria. This is strengthening. Iran is going to have $500 billion, $500 billion worth of money with which to supply Hezbollah, to supply Hamas, that oppresses the Palestinian people, that sends rockets into Israel. So that's just one side of the equation. Forget the nuclear possibility that's very, very strong now, with these restrictions only coming into force for 10 years. They are unverifiable. Going back to your question, they are unverifiable. The IAEA, Iran is going to be able to object. They're going to have to then go through all the committees, and they're going to be appealing to the people that they've been negotiating with today. It's quite astonishing, really, that politicians and diplomats that we've seen in Vienna can come to such conclusions. Supposedly intelligent people who've been voted in by their publics have done the world and specifically the Middle East a very, very tragic disservice today.
Well, Webster Griffin Tarpley, Richard Miller there just wiped off I'm not going to use the word wiped off, just disregarded 17 days of intense negotiations on top of the 12 years that this has been up for discussion. What has come out after these discussions is what Iran's foreign minister has said, Webster Griffin Tarpley, is that this is a win-win situation that has now culminated in this nuclear conclusion. When it comes to a win-win situation, what do you think that means for each side?
Well, I would first of all want to congratulate President Rouhani and Foreign Minister Zarif for what they've done. This is a major achievement, and there were quite vocal, bombastic forces here in the U.S. who didn't want the deal. For everyone involved, it brings the blessing of a possible peaceful settlement to this question and indeed to some others. And that was already the potential we saw in the interim agreement, which this is now going to replace. One thing it will do is bring a lot of oil onto the world market rather soon. So all of humanity will benefit from lower energy prices and a much better arrangement in that sense. I'd like to talk about one of the benefits here in the United States, if I could. The rhetoric which my colleague there has been using, I think, prefigures what the Republican presidential candidate will be saying about this. We have a presidential debate in Iowa now in the early part of August. It's less than a month away. And if the Republican Party decides to embrace that warmonger rhetoric, I don't know what else to call it, then their candidate will be doomed, and we will not have a Republican president for the foreseeable future. Always starting from the ground basic fact that the American people are sick of war and sick of the threats of war. The message from Mr. Netanyahu's deputy today that the Israelis will try to interfere with the ratification of this document, I think is a very unfriendly act and may clarify a little bit who one's own friends are. In reality, of course, according to the U.S. Constitution, this does not have to be ratified. This can be an executive agreement. But even the act of interfering. So the idea that you've got foreign countries trying to push you into a confrontation, possibly followed by military action, I think is going to clarify things a lot. I see this as a step towards the total demise of the Republican Party, which is expressing this. Let's not forget that we had the four traitors, right? We had a group of traitorous, rebellious, insurrectionary Republican senators who wrote that letter to Ayatollah Khamenei saying, you shouldn't be talking to Obama. That was Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, who later in an interview said that he thought the best solution for the U.S.-Iranian dispute is war. Well, that kind of a madman has no place in this government, and I hope his influence will be curbed now that some baseline of reality and decent government has been created.
So I'm going to ask you, Richard Millett, since you obviously appears to be a critic, you're appearing to be a critic of this deal, something that U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has addressed to the critics of this deal is, what better options were there? Do you have one?
Well, I mean, this is ridiculous. This is like ISIS. This is like you're sitting in Tehran. This is the equivalent of ISIS to you suddenly getting hold of the nuclear bomb. I mean, ISIS doesn't like Iran. Iran doesn't like Israel. Iran has repeatedly threatened to destroy Israel. We see on Friday and Al-Quds Day in Tehran, they're burning Israeli flags, they're burning American flags. They're in London, they're waving in London, they're waving Hezbollah flags throughout the city of London. The whole thing is crazy. The Middle East is up in smoke at the moment. Thousands of people are dying. Thousands of people are dying trying to get away from the Middle East. They're dying on the seas, they're dying in the Mediterranean, they're drowning. They're desperate to get to Europe. And now they go and hand one of the regimes that is behind most of this terror that they are fleeing from, they go and hand them $500 billion. Anything would have been better than what has been agreed today in Vienna. They should have kept the sanctions there until there was a change of regime in Iran, which would have freed up what has been going on to the Iranian people, to the Lebanese people, to the Israeli people, and to the Palestinian people. Webster should open his eyes. This isn't warmongering rhetoric that I'm coming out with. This is rhetoric that cares for the people in the region. What Webster is condoning today is more bloodshed. He is the warmonger.
I'm trying to figure out where you're getting the $500 billion from. I thought the figure was 100 billion.
Well, It's going to be at least half a billion once all the sanctions have been set aside. All the frozen assets are going to be released to Iran. It's not going to go to the Iranian people. This is going to go to the Revolutionary Guard. It's going to go to the regime. Don't think that there's going to be raising of standards for the people of Iran, because this isn't. This is just going to entrench the cruel Iranian regime.
Webster Griffin Tarpley, do you have a reaction there to Richard Millett?
Well, I'm afraid there are vocal politicians or political actors in many countries. In Israel, there are some. I guess there are some in Great Britain, too. They're always ready to fight to the last American. And the point is now, I think the American people have understood something, that this is not a winning proposition, that the neocons are one-trick ponies. War is their answer to everything. In the agreement that we have before us is remarkable in the sense that it proves the thesis that even in this rough time of the opening of the 21st century, war is not the only answer, right? There is a negotiated solution which is possible. I would just point out to viewers, the kind of superheated rhetoric and the kind of wild charges comparing Iran to Hezbollah to ISIS, that's absolutely ridiculous. And indeed, the slander of Hezbollah is ridiculous, as Hezbollah is helping the United States against ISIS in a number of parts of the world. But this is what you're going to hear. The opponents of peace and normal commercial economic development are scraping the bottom of the barrel for bankrupt arguments to bring out, right? Ad hominem, crazy, wild charges flailing in every direction. Get used to it. You'll be hearing that from the Republican presidential candidate here in the United States.
Richard Millett at the United Nations Security Council, they're preparing a resolution to endorse the deal restricting Iran's nuclear development in exchange for the lifting of sanctions against Tehran. That's going to actually be happening pretty quickly. Guesstimates are between a week to 10 days. And guess who actually led that? It was the United States.
Well, yes, indeed. It was President Obama. And funnily enough, you know, since I've been coming on your show, which I appreciate being invited, but I do hear the rhetoric that this is America, Israel, there's this powerful Israeli lobby, there's this powerful Jewish lobby. Well, obviously now you're going to have to drop that ridiculously, not you, but your guests are going to have to drop that ridiculous argument now, because obviously it's not the case.
Why would you say that's not the case when we still have the Republicans who are so vociferously against this noise? Is still coming out of the reactions I'm seeing from Congress here, or Republicans, I should say.
Well, I mean, they have an opposition, they have a view, but the person in control, as we've heard, are Kerry and Obama, and as they've said, it's not going to be, Congress is not going to be able to stop this. What they've signed is something that Congress cannot stop. It's going to involve Democrats going against their own party, which isn't obviously going to happen. So this is signed, sealed, and delivered. Congratulations to the Iranian regime. They've got what they wanted. They have a potential nuclear weapon, and they have $500 billion with which to fund terrorist organizations in the Middle East and throughout the world.
Okay, Westbrook Griffin Tripoli, we do have to talk about some of the regional implications here, because when it comes to the countries of the P5 and then Iran, of course, not all agree on some of the approaches that are made by these countries vis-a-vis Iran and its approach. We can mention Syria, we can mention Iraq, we can mention Yemen. So how is it that there's this nuclear conclusion, and yet there's diverging views and approaches towards different countries in the region?
Well, obviously, the deal that we have in front of us now is a good thing and a step in the right direction, but it was not the optimum solution. We have to go back. How did we ever get to this, right? This is really George W. Bush and Dick Cheney raving about Iran all during the first decade of this century, more or less, that got this on the agenda. So now what we really needed and still continue to need would be something like a comprehensive peace conference on the Middle East to begin to address, as you say, Yemen, Syria, all the other problems, and really over overarching all of that is the question of a Marshall Plan. Look at all the countries in the Middle East that are now devastated by war. Lebanon, Iraq, Syria now, Gaza, the Palestinian territories kept in poverty and so forth. So there's a long list of things that ought to be tackled. The hope with the nuclear deal is that that might open the door to maybe one by one or all at once peace solutions and above all economic development solutions that would allow these peace deals to become permanent. So it's not perfect, but if it's going to be done step by step, then this is the first or second step.
I got 30 seconds here to give to you, Richard Millett. Fast forward a year based on, we can fast forward to 8 years or 10 years based on the phased approach that has been finalized in this deal. Do you foresee there to be some regional shifts where Israel is going to be okay and you have regional countries at this point, some of the Persian Gulf countries coming to the conclusion that there's stability that has evolved based on this historic nuclear conclusion?
Well, I echo what Webster has said there. I hope there is this, that the peace holds. I hope this is a good deal, but you have to be cynical about it. It doesn't look, as it stands, it is going to be a good deal. And the worry is that it's only going to exacerbate the horrendous war that is going on in Syria, and it's only going to strengthen Hamas, that is going to continue to oppress the Palestinian people in Gaza, and is going to continue firing rockets into Israel. And many, many, many more people are going to be killed, unfortunately, as a result of the 14th of July, 2015.
30 seconds for you, Webster Griffin Tarpley. Saudi Arabia and Israel, are they going to continue solidifying their stance against Iran in terms of trying to, obstruct this historic conclusion to come into fruition fully?
I hope not. The first thing that we've seen is that the Netanyahu policies in Israel are an absolute blind alley. He says no to talks for a Palestinian state, and now he turns around and says there can be no peace deal, and he's going to interfere in American internal affairs to try to sabotage this in the Congress. And again, that's an unfriendly act. As far as the Saudis go, if that gaggle of people wants to stay in power, they also have to change their tune rapidly. Their methods are not going to fare well in this new
unfortunately, I have to
somewhat
jump in.
More pacified
I do
Middle
apologize. We're fresh out of time. Thank you very much for that. Author and historian Webster Griffin Tarpley from Washington and Richard Millett, journalist, talking to us from London. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Tawai and the entire team in the capital of Tehran, it's goodbye.